Our opening text this afternoon is 1 Peter, the 5th chapter, verses 8 and 9. Here is some inside information. How to keep out of trouble. Be sober, be vigilant, because your adversary, the devil, as a roaring lion, walketh about seeking whom he may devour. Whom resist steadfast in the faith. Would you get me a volume 4 from the study, please? Thank you. Now notice this text. The devil is compared here to a what? A roaring lion. Does a lion roar all the time? No. He roars just about the time he's sure of his prey. Other times he walketh about, stalking, watching. Looking. And the devil is a lion. He's a roaring lion, but he's not roaring all the time. Now, the point is, he's our adversary, and in the 9th verse, we're told what to do about him. What is it? Resist him. Don't go along with him. Don't go along with him. Messages to Young People, page 454. Here's a sentence that I've read before, but it never impressed me so much as it has in getting ready for this class today. The paragraph that begins in the middle of the page, it is Satan's studied effort to secure the youth in sin, for then he is sure of the man. The enemy of souls is filled with intense hatred against every endeavor to influence the youth in the right direction. How does the devil feel about this class? He what? He hates it. Yes, he does. Intense hatred. Well, that's all right. I have no desire to court his favor. Have you? He's a what? He's a liar. Seeking whom he may devour. And he knows if he can get the young people, he'll have them as they get older. Now, on the next page, 455, Messages to Young People, notice two statements, one under the other, showing what Satan is busy at. Top of 455. Satan is constantly what? Busy to hurry inexperienced youth into a marriage alliance. Who's in the business of hurrying the inexperienced into marriage? Satan. All right. Now the last paragraph. Satan is what? Busily engaged. Here it is again. The other says he's constantly busy. This says he's busily engaged. Satan is busily engaged in influencing those who are wholly unsuited to each other to unite their interests. He exults in this work, for by it he can produce more misery and hopeless woe to the human family than by exercising his skill in any other direction. This is his most successful activity. Think of it. You look at it. Here are two people that each one of them united with the proper one could make a success. But you put those two together. This says it produces misery and hopeless woe. And so the devil is studying all the time to get people that were never meant for each other to be married. That's his business. Now, go to 458 and you'll find what his batting average is. 458. It's near the bottom of the page, but it's the paragraph that begins on this page. This kind of marrying and giving in marriage is one of Satan's special devices, and he succeeds in his plans. That's the next three words. Almost every time. Isn't that pitiful, friend? In other words, the lion gets his prey almost every time. And he does it through this skillful, subtle plan of getting people that aren't meant for each other, tied up together. Now, This says almost every time. Here's a little one a little more mathematically expressed. Volume 4, page 504. 4T504. There is not one marriage in 100 that results happily, that bears the sanction of God and places the parties in a position better to glorify. The devil succeeds how often? 99 times out of 100. My, no wonder he keeps at it. If you were trying to do something and you could succeed 99 times out of 100, wouldn't you be really encouraged? Yeah. But our text says, whom resist? Thank God, we don't have to go the devil's road. We don't have to listen to his lies. Thank God, we have something better. We have something better. Now, we're studying this afternoon some more on Christian courtship. And as we have seen, Christian courtship is not a play to have some fun. It isn't a game to see who wins. It isn't a net to see who gets caught. Not a scheme. Nothing of that kind. Christian courtship is a sincere effort on the part of two young people who, under proper counsel before and during courtship, are seeking to find out the will of God concerning their union or not. That's its purpose. And as we've seen, every step toward a marriage alliance is to be characterized by what? Modesty, simplicity, sincerity, and an earnest purpose to please and honor God. And courtship is one of the steps, one of the very important steps. And so here, this is to be characterized by modesty, simplicity, not extravagance. My, my. I think of the way things are done conventionally. And young men that can hardly pay their tuition or their board bill will lay out all kinds of money for orchids and chocolate candy, Valentine boxes, and formals, and you know, on and on and on. But every step in this Christian program is to be characterized by modesty and what? Simplicity. And what's that third one? Sincerity. You know what sincerity means? It means genuine, that you mean what you say and say what you mean. It's just the opposite of put on, show off. So much of conventional courtship is pretense, fraud. But Christian courtship is genuine. In other words, be yourself. Don't try to think, now, what image am I supposed to project? What am I supposed to look like and how am I supposed to act? Well, be yourself. If the other party gets you because you put on something and then finds out that you aren't that at all, somebody's going to be disappointed, aren't they? Maybe two people, at least one. Oh, it's a wonderful thing in Christian living, not merely on this subject, but the whole way through, to just be yourself. Just be yourself. And if that means somebody else doesn't like you, okay. At least they know it and you know it. God has something for you to do, but God never intended for you to pretend to be something that you're not in order to win something. Nothing of the kind. Every step characterized by modesty, simplicity, sincerity, and a sincere purpose to please and honor God. All right, now this afternoon, I have something very interesting to study with you, and first take the book Messages to Young People. On the question, does emotion lead or follow? Now, love is not simply emotion, but I wouldn't say that there is no emotion. And when people are married and God has led them together, they love each other. And while it's a deep principle, there's also emotion. No problem about that at all. There's emotion. They really feel love for each other. The problem is that so many people, before they ever get to marriage or even engagement, they fall in love. Now, I want to tell you something, friends, and this is more than a play on words. You don't fall upwards, right? And the falling in love that people talk about, so many times it is falling. It's infatuation. But this doesn't mean that there is not real feeling for each other in the Christian plan. But the question is, when should it come? When should two people that God is leading together, when should the emotions be allowed to have their part? This is a very important question. And so I want to study it with you briefly. We'll start with 447. I just want to run through a few of these pages, calling your attention briefly to some of these expressions. 447, need of sound judgment. If there is any subject that should be considered with calm reason and unimpassioned judgment, it is the subject of marriage. Considered with what? Calm reason and unimpassioned judgment. It is a subject of marriage. If ever the Bible is needed as a counselor, it is before taking a step that binds persons together for life. But the prevailing sentiment is that in this matter, the feelings are to be the guide. Where does a guide go? He goes before. Now this says the prevailing idea is that feelings are to be the guide. What does that mean? Well, that means young people associate together and they fall for each other. And that's supposed to mean that probably they're meant for each other. Does this paragraph countenance that? Does it endorse that idea? Oh, no. No. In too many cases, love-sick sentimentalism takes the helm and guides to certain ruin. From this paragraph, would you conclude that feelings in the proper plan are to guide or are they to follow? They're to follow. All right. 449. The last line in the second paragraph. While you may love, do not love blindly. In other words, look first. Look first. 450. First paragraph. True love is a plant that needs culture. Let the woman who desires a peaceful, happy union, who would escape future misery and sorrow, inquire before she yields her affections. Then it lists a number of questions she's to ask. But she's to ask these questions when? Before she yields her affection. Girls, I want to ask you something. Can you control your affections, or is that just something that happens to you? You catch it like the measles. Well, you see, if it's something that just happens to you, if you catch it like the measles, then there's no point in this sin. Because the Christian woman is to raise these questions when? Before she what? She yields her affections. You mean your choice has something to do with it? Can you control your affections? Well, you can if you've learned how. First, if you don't know how, like trying to ride a horse and you never knew how to ride a horse, it might be difficult. Can't even ride a bicycle unless you learn how, can you? Now, can you control your affections? I repeat, you can if you know how. The point is, in God's plan, the affections are supposed to be under control. And they're not to lead in this matter. They're to follow. 452, first sentence. Boys and girls enter upon the marriage relation with unripe love, immature judgment, without noble elevated feelings, and take upon themselves the marriage vow wholly led by what? Their boyish, girlish passions, their feelings, their impulses, physical and mental. They're led. I remember years ago I heard a young fellow say, my motto is obey that impulse. That's what he did. That's the way he ate. That's the way he went with the girls. Obey that impulse. Is this the Christian's motto? Decidedly not. Thank God we've got something better than impulse. 457. This is talking, as the preceding page near the bottom shows, talking about infatuation. Now the paragraph beginning on 457. All that can be said by men and women of experience proves ineffectual. It is powerless to change the decision to which their desires have led them. This is talking about the wrong kind. What led them? Well, isn't that all right? No. No, that isn't all right. Maybe all wrong. 459. First paragraph, last two sentences. But advice is only thrown away on those who are determined to have their own way. Passion carries such individuals over every barrier that reason and judgment can interpose. There you have it. Suppose we have a powerful animal here and he's in a corral. But something happens that stirs him up and he wants to get out. But there's a fence all around there. Did you ever see an animal jump a fence? Did you ever see an animal tear down a fence? Oh, yes. That's the picture here. And what is it that will cause people to jump every barrier? Passion, impulse, physical and mental, sentimental, infatuation, desire. Page 460. The last part of the first paragraph. We are not to please ourselves, for Christ pleased not himself. I would not be understood to mean that anyone is to marry one whom he does not love. This would be sin. But fancy and the emotional nature must not be allowed to lead on to ruin. God requires the whole heart, the supreme affections. Is there a time for love? Yes. And it's to be before what? Before marriage. But the feeling we call love is not to lead in choosing a mate. Oh, somebody says, but I'd hate to marry somebody I don't love. Don't worry, you won't. Not if you follow the Lord's instructions. You won't marry somebody you don't love. The danger is not that you'll marry somebody you don't love. The danger is that you'll fall in love with somebody that you were never meant to marry. That's the danger. And that's why the barriers are set up in that matter. But listen, you notice we've read a number of times in this course so far that love is the gift of God. Do you believe that? Listen, if by good sense and wise counsel and study and prayer you are led to the partner of God's choice, do you think that he will do all that leading and then refuse to give you the gift of love? Do you think he would do that? Why, no, it's absurd. And I'll tell you, the divine love, which comes at the proper time to the proper people, is worth more than all the foam and froth of the world's infatuation. Few people know about it because they're led the other way. But remember, friend, love is a vital part of this series of experiences that lead to marriage. But all these references that we have read show that our feelings are not to what? They're not to lead. Well, if they don't lead, then what are they supposed to do? Follow. Did you ever have difficulty with a dog that wouldn't follow? I've watched it many a time. A dog loves to go out for a walk with somebody. But he wants to run ahead. So he'll run, and pretty soon the trail divides, right fork, left fork. And the dog takes it for granted we're going left fork. So away he goes down. But pretty soon he finds that we're over on the right fork. Well, the dog's at least got sense enough to backtrack and come along. Sometimes people can't do that. They are led by their feelings. See? And remember, your feelings are like the dog. They're supposed to follow. And if they get out of hand and run ahead, don't let that decide which trail you take. Don't let the dog run you. You be the master. That's what God gave you a brain for, wisdom, good sense, judgment. And that's why he gave you counselors. Because, may I tell you, friends, if there is any subject in all human experience where your own judgment is not sufficient. This is it. If there is any subject in which you need the counsel of others, this is it. Oh, yes. And even, you know, I hear young people say, oh, well, we've prayed about it. Well, bless your hearts, as you ought to pray about it. But do you suppose that just praying over something is all there is to it? Why, no, that isn't enough. Here, there's a sentence here that I wanted you to notice. Yes, 447 messages to young people. Bottom of 447. Here's quite a warning, like a lighthouse on a rocky shore. On this rock, thousands have made shipwreck of their souls. Professed Christians whose lives are marked with integrity and who seem sensible upon every other subject make fearful mistakes here. Think of it. Here's a young man, he's a good Christian, got good judgment on most subjects. He gets into this subject, into this experience, he may make a fearful mistake. Now, does that mean that there's no way to be sure? No, it doesn't mean that at all. We're studying the rules by which we can be certain. All right? Now, I want to take you through some very interesting counsels covering some of these same pages, but we're going back now to 435. On this question of courtship, 435. And again, I just want to briefly notice certain sentences. You will be studying them over. Of course, you've gone through these pages already, but I suppose I've gone through some of them 50 times and I'm still getting more out of them, so I don't mind if you go through them two or three times. 435. Second paragraph. Let those who are contemplating marriage do what? Weigh every sentiment and watch every development of character in the one with whom they think to unite their life destiny. Let every step toward a marriage alliance be characterized by modesty, simplicity, sincerity, and an earnest purpose to please and honor God. Now notice, part of the courtship program is to do what? Weigh every sentiment. This comes back to this matter of sincerity that I spoke of a while ago. You must be yourself because you're being weighed. If you're trying to weigh the other person, wouldn't you want them to be sincere? If what you were marrying for was money, it isn't, but suppose it were. Wouldn't you be disappointed if the person would act like a millionaire and put on pretense? You found out it was all borrowed money? Well, there are other things to borrow besides money. Some young men borrow automobiles to make an impression. Some girls borrow dresses to make an impression. Hairdos or this, that, and the other. Be yourself, and as you associate with the other party, I'm talking about in courtship now, weigh every sentiment and watch every development of character. That's one of the great purposes of courtship, is to get acquainted, to see whether this is God's purpose for you or not. 438. This page warns against missing religious meetings in order to engage in courtship. In the second paragraph, it cautions against sitting up late at night. Indicates his customary in courtship, but not pleasing to God. Injures health, unfits the mind for the next day's duties, and has an appearance of evil. Move, it says, with deliberate caution. Two words. Deliberate caution. This is in courtship. Well, I see our time is about up, so I'll leave it right here. We'll continue in our next lesson.